101.5 FM, 720 AM. KDON, the talk of Las Vegas.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the number one professional wrestling radio show in Las Vegas. This is the Mark Hoke Show.
The Mark Hoke Show.
One full hour of wrestling news, entertainment, and lots of Sin City surprises from inside the squared circle. Now, let's bring on the host. Here is Mark Hoke.
All right, everybody. Oh, my goodness. What a day. Woo! Who's the man? I think is what we're going to be saying tonight. My goodness. We got a cat fight in WWE land. But hey, I'm Mark Hoke, and yeah, it's Saturday night, and you know what that means. They didn't have anybody else to put on the air, so here I am. Thanks for being with us. Normally, we're on, we're still on Sundays at 8 a.m., Pacific time, but tonight we're getting a little Saturday night action in. Fish Vane is out, I think, working at the Thunder Down Under show. I don't know if he's in it or he's an usher or what. And we want to take a second to wish Joe DeFalco all the best. Unfortunately, his mother suddenly passed away and he is in New York. So Joe will be probably taking the weekend off here. But so, Joe, we miss you, buddy, and hope you and your family are doing well. But, man, I'm still trying to catch my breath. James Samuel on the line with us, the big man, the bad man. What's up, brother?
How's it going, my man? How you doing?
Oh, geez. You know, you produce a two-hour politics show and literally have 3 minutes to transition into talking about professional wrestling. That's not easy. Man. Plus a bathroom sprint, too. Oh, man. I'll tell you what. But it has been one heck of a weekend. And, of course, we had the WWE Crown Jewel pay-per-view on Thursday morning here, aired Thursday morning here in Las Vegas.
Surprisingly good pay-per-view.
Yeah, we're gonna get to talk about that a little bit today and tomorrow. But, you know, it was funny because I really didn't want to form any opinions or, you know, start putting together Sunday's show until I saw what happened on SmackDown. I figured, well, it's probably going to be pretty important. All the players are switching teams, going from Raw and SmackDown to Raw and NXT up and moving all around from the WWE draft. But James, good Lord, what the hell happened last night? Can you believe this? If you didn't hear the news, and I'm going to totally blame WWE for causing this to happen. I think it's a very safe thing to say that had they done any advance booking, any advance planning at all, the fiasco that has taken place and some potential fallout wouldn't have gone down. So, here's what happened. They managed to book themselves into a little bit of a corner. Charlotte Flair was the Raw Women's Champion. But she got drafted over to SmackDown. Fox wanted her to go over there, so she's over there. Our dear friend, Big Time Bex, the man, Becky Lynch, was the SmackDown Women's Champion. They drafted her over to Raw. So the two of them are going to be switching shows. Here's where the problem came in. They've got the different belts from what shows they're going to be on, so we have to do something to switch it around. The last time this happened, they did it with the tag team titles, and the two teams just said, oh, here's your belts, bye-bye. And they ended up, instead of doing some booking and maybe giving somebody who was on SmackDown the SmackDown title or somebody who was on Raw the Raw title, we're going to do the belt switch again. So on SmackDown last night, they were doing a little thing in the ring where Becky and Charlotte were out there with Sonya Deville, and they were going to trade the belts off. But Charlotte didn't like how it was going to go down. And Becky didn't like how it was going to go down because neither of them wanted to look like they were weak in any way. Understandable. They're trying to protect their brand. Well, we had belts on the ground getting thrown down and knocked out of everybody's hands, and Sonya Deville telling Charlotte to pick that up. And the segment went completely off the rails. And you could see the tension between Becky and Charlotte. I mean, laser eyes. Mean, nasty, super-powered, outer space laser eyes at each other. Until Becky couldn't even look at her anymore. Then the segment ends. Becky has a dark match, because it was the last thing on the show. Becky has a dark match afterward. So she's got to go wrestle. But they go to the back, and apparently the two of them got into it. No physicality, but they tore into each other. Charlotte was furious about the whole thing, did not acknowledge Vince McMahon, and ended up having to have security take her out of the building while Becky was wrestling. It got that bad. Your top two women in maybe the industry are now ready to kill each other. And according to all sorts of different sources, this is just been devastating. And now, James, I'm going to give you a shot to tell me the news that you told me because I was producing a show. What did you find out?
Yeah, sources have said that Charlotte Flair will be leaving when her contract expires. You know, the tension is just boiled over last night, and it's looking like her next destination will be at AEW.
Oh. And to be honest with you, you're not necessarily surprised to hear that, because if you don't know, she is engaged to Andre El Idolo. Andrade was in WWE.
And then a tweet that he put saying, you know, F-word WWE. I think that's really what did it, because I think that they probably told her that they wasn't going to do much with her after that, or kind of, you know, told her some bad news. So I think that's probably why she definitely, you know, is trying to bolt over there.
This is an unreal disaster. Because, you know, I'll be honest with you. I mean, I love Becky. You know, and you've got great wrestlers there like Sasha Banks, Bianca Belair, Bayley, who's on the shelf right now, but, you know, you got to include her in there too. But, man, if I'm picking one female wrestler to lead my women's division in any promotion, and there are a lot of great ones all around the world, I'm taking Charlotte. There's no question about it. I'm taking Charlotte.
I'm taking Bianca Belair, and that also was a big, I guess, dispute last night in that fight, that Charlotte felt that she should have dropped the belt to Belair anyway when they had their match on Raw.
And when they announced that before the pay-per-view that took place on Thursday, Charlotte was going to be wrestling Bianca Belair. It was a chance that they could have had to have moved that belt from Charlotte to Bianca, who was on Raw. And Charlotte, from all reports, wanted to do it. But they came up with some bogus DQ finish on the match, and Charlotte kept the title. And it was just, this whole thing has just been, the women's division has been so badly booked in WWE lately. You know, you look at what happened with this Queen's Crown tournament, that, you know, what I think it was total in all those matches for the tournament, the seven matches in all, was about 22 minutes for these ladies. And everybody was so excited about this tournament. I mean, this is an unmitigated disaster. And now, then you set yourself up with two women who, rightfully so, want to make sure that they don't look bad on TV. They're both champions. So, you know, neither of them wants to seem like one's better than the other. And this turned into a fracas. And now you have Charlotte Flair apparently maybe requesting a release and trying to get out of there. And to be honest with you, the way things are going, I don't blame her. James, what are your thoughts about this whole situation?
I feel like they did a horrible job because they seen this coming. They seen, okay, well, you got, you know, Becky is champion and Charlotte is champion, and you're going to have to do a weird like title switch. So really, I felt like you should have took the belts off of them. And really, it doesn't matter about people going to say, oh, well, SmackDown wanted Charlotte Flair. Okay, they can have Charlotte Flair doesn't have to be champion for her to do numbers for their show. She's been champion all the time. Like, so it's not like the fan base is going to miss her not having a belt. So, and I think it would have made that whole SmackDown situation better with a new face as champion with her back in the hunt. So that gives that other young wrestler the rub of Charlotte while them being champion and having it in a program with her. The same thing with Raw. If you have Becky Lynch trying to come conquer that roster versus her being on top, because look at Raw now. So you have Becky Lynch and Belair, and then who else in that division? Absolutely no one who is a credible, you know, contender. So now we're going to have, I guess, a whole 2-3 more months of Becky versus Bianca again. So I think they have the most talented female roster, not even close. I think it's not even close. WWE has the most talented female roster. But you're right. They've been booking them into the ground.
And to be honest with you, this all started back at SummerSlam, which was here in Las Vegas, when Bianca ended up getting beat by Becky Lynch in 26 seconds. They had to improvise a match because Sasha Banks, something happened with Sasha that she couldn't wrestle this match. It was going to be their big rematch from WrestleMania. And all of a sudden, and I'm in the stands for this. Becky's music plays and everybody's all excited and you're thinking, oh, maybe Becky's going to challenge her. And all of a sudden they have this impromptu match. They bury Bianca and Becky walks out with the title. And I think that's kind of the root of where all that problem started, because they did something on the fly. And I'll tell you who could partially be to blame for this, and, you know, not blame, but help cause this. That was right after everything happened with AEW. And CM Punk signing and Adam Cole going over there and everything else. And Bryan Danielson. And they needed to make, I remember saying, they needed to make a splash at SummerSlam. They had to do a couple big things to get everybody talking about WWE again. That was their decision to bury a fantastic athlete, an up-and-coming star that you built up for so long in 26 seconds, Bianca Belair, put the belt on Becky, and then, you know, for some reason, we're going to switch the shows. This whole thing has made no sense. And we've been talking on the show on Sunday about how the women's division, everybody back there has just got to be going crazy because of what happened, you know, with this Queen's Crown tournament. That the longest match in that tournament was the final, and it was 6 minutes. Every TV match was, I think the longest one was about 3.5, if I remember right, somewhere in there. I mean, if they buried Shayna Baszler with Doudrop and Natty. Zelina wins the tournament, you know, good for her. But
first off,
yeah, this is unbelievable what they've done.
Like, how do you get someone over with the name Doudrop? It's just like that's not like possible. Like, you know what I mean? Like that's like Vince stuff that is like it's like unacceptable. Like sometimes the way he books stuff for his inner 13-year-old child, like I don't get it.
Well, yeah, and here's and Doudrop was Piper Niven, who was out there on the independent circuit all over the world. You know, I still think she's got needs a little polishing, but they pull her up off NXT. She's Eva Marie's, I don't know, sidekick. They have a falling out, and then all of a sudden, you know, she's in the Queen of the Ring final without having really beaten anybody. And then you have Zelina Vega, who for a year hadn't won a match in WWE, and she ends up winning the Queen's Crown tournament. And like I said, you took Liv Morgan. You wrecked her. You wrecked Natty. You wrecked Shayna Baszler. And you just kind of shake your head and say, what are you doing? And now, because of all this, it's come to a head, and you could be losing Charlotte Flair. That is unbelievable to me. And, James, what do you think they can do to fix this situation?
That's a great question, Mark. I think you would just have to really, like, I think you have to give Becky Lynch a stable. What do you think about that?
Oh, that would be interesting. Well, here's the question. Is, you know, I'm an advocate for they should only have one women's championship just because you don't have that many people. If you look at, you know, you mentioned about the Raw roster and just kind of running down the women that are there. You know, Asuka's out. You got Lacey Evans coming back. Rhea Ripley's doing the tag team championship right now. You just had Zelina Vega win the Queen's Crown, but she's not in that class. So, I mean, who would you put with her is the question. Tegan Knox? Dana Brooke? I mean, they've really... Boy, they because them burying all these other people, they have just destroyed the situation.
I think she'd be such a good alpha leader that it doesn't really matter who you put with her. They're just doing the muscle, you know, muscling her aspiration, and then they get the rubber being part with her. So then when they have the eventual split off, that person gets to have a marquee match with her, and now their, you know, stock has been improved. And that's what you kind of have to do, because with no one else on that roster has stock to be improved. So I think you're going to have to use your stars to rub off on them for the audience to care about those other, you know, women wrestlers.
Yeah, this is, boy, I'll tell you, that WWE Creative has had enough trouble as is, but good luck on this one, kids, because Charlotte Flair walking into an AEW ring. And to be honest with you, would you blame Charlotte? I mean, even when her contract was coming up anyway, you know, she's engaged to Andrade. And you kind of think they'd want to be together if possible. But it's so mind-boggling to think about Charlotte not being in WWE anymore. I don't know, man. That is just a huge wow to me. So... Yeah, so we got that is an unbelievable mess that's going on. And then when you look at some of the other things that WWE has been doing, I guess we could kind of lead in with what happened on last Friday night too. For those that didn't know, the WWE had to move over to Fox Sports 1 from the regular Fox network because of the baseball playoffs. So they decided to supersize their show, added a half an hour, which overlapped with the AEW Rampage show. So Vince thought he'd get cute, and Tony Khan was shooting off his mouth. But James turned out he wasn't shooting off his mouth, because the ratings came out. There's Fast Network ratings that come out, which we had talked about on last Sunday, that WWE had like 898,000 and Rampage did about close to 6, somewhere in there. But those overlap half hours that the ratings came out on Monday, AEW, with a match with CM Punk and Matt Sydal, beat a commercial-free, mind you, half hour. The first 15, they had Becky Lynch and Sasha Banks. Punk and Sydal beat them in the 18-49 demo. And then, James, I think this is the most embarrassing part about it. You've got Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns, Paul Heyman doing a contract signing. After a commercial break on Rampage, Ruby Soho and the Bunny tied them in the demo. And Vince McMahon's just got to be rolling right now. We've heard he didn't overreact too much. But, James, what did you think about that when you saw those ratings come out? And... Well, AEW won.
I don't think nothing really like surprised me with that, because you know they're the new kids on the block. They're just, you know, the shiny toy. Like, you know, like everyone's still having fun playing with them right now. You know, so and really, I honestly think Vince is not worried about them. Now if that is smart, you know, that's to be determined. but I really don't think he's worried about them.
No, and actually, I had another story that I had pulled up. And like, give me 1 second here. I'm trying to produce the show and do it at the same time. But the essence of it is WWE feels like this is a lot of people said this is a fluke. We don't care. We're WWE. We're the big dog. We don't have to worry about this. But the, you know, the funny part was they were so worried about it tonight that on Fox they managed to do a replay of SmackDown with some items from Crown Jewel in it to go against Dynamite, which is normally on AEW's Dynamite show, which is normally on Wednesdays, but it's airing on Saturday because of NBA, I believe. So what is going on over there? I mean, James, it just seems like there's a company like WWE shouldn't be reactionary, but they are badly reacting to what would seem like a minimal amount of competition from AEW. You know, AEW is certainly growing and doing great, and it's an awesome product. But they're, you know, it seems like they're just throwing darts at the board right now.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what, like, if I was Vince, would get me nervous about AEW. And really, the only thing I would say is the way they've been booking Hangman Page shows that they might have, you know, a little pulse on, you know, something to give them a run for their money. Because I've been really disappointed with the whole CM Punk situation. Like, so right now, CM Punk to me feels like Bret Hart and WCW right now. Like that's how I feel about CM Punk right now.
Well, you know, Punk actually got asked about that. For those that don't know, you know, CM Punk, obviously the former WWE superstar, was out of wrestling for 7 years, took some time off, was doing MMA. Unfortunately, didn't go well for him, but you know, AEW managed to sign him to come back. Punk has not taken on what you would call, you know, the upper echelon in AEW yet. You know, not going after guys like Kenny Omega, Brian Danielson, and so on. You know, Punk actually said, "Just give it time. We're building here, and plus, you know, I'm still getting back in the swing of things. It's been a while." You know, would I like to see Punk getting into some heavier matches? Absolutely. But I think that from every indication that I've seen, he doesn't feel like he's quite ready yet, and he wants to make sure that he puts himself out there properly. You know, like Becky and Charlotte, they want to present themselves in a way that they look good, and Punk doesn't want to put himself in a position where, you know, he goes out and, you know, because obviously everybody's watching every move that he makes. He doesn't want to put a stinker out there. You know, so he's being careful. Like, so it's kind of a weird balance.
I feel like he's too good of a wrestler to have that like thought. I think he's way too good of a wrestler. And I think due to all the wars and rounds he did on the indie circuit way before he went to WWE, those years off really kind of were good. So his body could, you know, recover. But I feel like they have absolutely dropped the ball on his and been hitting it out the park with Daniel Bryanson. I think that he's been amazing. The way they've been showcasing him has been amazing. I think him and Hangman Page, to me, have been the MVPs of AEW.
Yeah, and the Bryan Danielson matches have been incredible. You know, they actually did that buy-in last week where they did a show on YouTube during SmackDown where Bryan Danielson wrestled Minoru Suzuki, who is a legendary Japanese wrestler and a tough, tough man. And good Lord, my chest still hurts from seeing their chests. Oh, my God. They destroyed each other. They absolutely destroyed each other, but it was a lot of fun. So, yeah, mm-hmm. We'll see where it goes with Bryan Danielson there. But, yeah, so we got some chaos in WWE. This is a really bad situation for them. We'll see. But, hey, we're going to be headed to break here in just a little bit. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on with what happened to Crown Jewel, actually, this weekend. Also, we have AEW news and so on. A lot happening. Stick around, everybody. We're going to be right back here on a special edition of the Mark Hoke Show, Saturday night, baby! Ho-ho! With James. James is sitting in here with me, too, having a great time. So we will see you on the other side of the break. Stick around for more of the best in pro wrestling news and entertainment in Las Vegas. We'll be right back.
Streaming.
101.5 FM, 720 AM. KDON, the talk of Las Vegas. This is the Mark Hoke Show.
The Mark Hoke Show.
Here again, your host, Mark Hoke.
All right, everybody, we are back, even though I think I left my mic on. Hey. I'll tell you, producing a show and doing the same time. Daughter interrupted. Sorry about that, guys. But, hey, Saturday night special, Mark Hoke Show. Mark, and along with our good buddy, James Samuel, sitting in. James, how's your day going, by the way? What's going on?
Oh, man, doing great. You know, came from a shift at El Cortez, you know, supervisor at the sports book, and you're talking wrestling, man. I love it.
Yeah, there you go. So we have, of course, a really, we had a really interesting week. Obviously, what happened there at SmackDown, but, you know, we had a little bit of a pay-per-view going on. Just, you know, a little crown jewel thing going on with Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar duking it out. Before we get into each match and kind of talk about that, overall impressions of the pay-per-view, what'd you think?
I think it was very, very great in-ring-wise. Like, you know, with the whole booking of WWE, everyone can have their own opinions about that. And we're all probably right that it's horrible. But the in-ring, I think, of the last two pay-per-views of WWE is very, very well wrestled.
You know, and that's one thing that drives me nuts about WWE right now is if the creative team had any coordination going on right now, any coherence, they have the most amazing performers in the business. Obviously, there's great guys over at AEW, too. But they are so polished. They've got a great product. You know, production values are incredible. I just feel bad for these guys sometimes and the ladies that they're just put in these positions where it gets too sports entertainment-y and you're not getting the intensity and the excitement maybe that you're getting from AEW because, you know, you got goofy stuff going on and, you know, you've got Bruce Pritchard back in charge in there as executive, you know, VP-ish. John Laurinaitis is back in talent relations. And, you know, right away we see the women slip and crazy stuff happening. So it's frustrating because you see a pay-per-view where, you know, pretty much every match was solid. When I watched it, I didn't see what I would call a bad match or anything. I mean, we had some bad ones at WrestleMania. So a lot of people are saying the Crown Jewel was the best pay-per-view of the year so far for WWE. They're probably right. It was a solid card. But man, I just wish they'd pull it together a little bit.
So what was your favorite match from that pay-per-view?
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned that because I was just going to start going down through those. We did have an opening match with the Usos against the Hurt Business. Obviously it was on the pre-show, but, wish that match would have had more time. Wouldn't mind seeing those teams go at it again. Not bad, but the opening match of the night with Seth Rollins against Edge and Hell in a Cell, their third match, they were 1-1 and we got the rubber match and boy, did we ever, wow. Those two are just absolutely amazing together. You have rivalries over the years in wrestling that you just get two guys in the ring that are unreal and just seem to click. And these two did it again. This was, you know, the match was almost a half hour. Man, you didn't know it. It was fantastic. What did you think about that one?
I think that was a very great match. I think that was the best match on the card. And I think, you know, that's what you're going to get from two dudes who have, I think Seth Rollins is one of the best sellers in the industry.
Yes, he is,
bar none.
Yeah,
and I think
I'm sorry, and
paired,
just see, oh,
that
I'm sorry,
paired with Edge's ring psychology makes for great chemistry.
Yeah, and just so you know, if anybody's new to wrestling and doesn't know what we're talking about, selling just means, you know, when someone does something to you, how do you project what happened? Because obviously, you know, somebody hits you and, you know, looks like they're going to hit you with a wrench or something like that. They don't necessarily make contact, but it's what the reaction that you give. So,
and I think selling is the most important thing in wrestling because think about it. That is what's projecting to the person on TV or in the audience. You know what I mean? For it to be a spectacle, for it to be a match. You know what I mean? So I think that that's one of the most important things in the business. I think he's one of the best at it. I think he makes every move look believable. I think he makes, you know, when he does do it, you know, extra, it fits the moment. And I think, you know, he matches, you know, his selling athletic ability and ring psychology very well. I think Seth Rollins might be the best in ring right now we have in the industry.
Well, he might. And, you know, one interesting thing that I was thinking about after this was over is, where does Edge go from here? For those that don't know, Edge was out for 9 years because of neck issues. Finally was able to recover enough that he got cleared to come back into the ring. He's actually in the WWE Hall of Fame. But it's interesting, now that this is over, and of course he had already, you know, lost in the at WrestleMania to Roman Reigns in that triple threat match, but of course it was a triple threat. Where does Edge go?
I think you have him turn heel on Raw, and I think you do that because I think it's the perfect story you could tell of him being the paranoid, bitter veteran, wanting his one last chance with the belt, and he gets to see and he sees Big E with the belt, joking around, having fun, you know, being jovial. So I think that would be a great story you could have. Big E, the young buck in charge, versus the veteran wanting his last shot, and he knows this is literally his last shot. And I think Edge is so good at portraying crazy that you'll see that through the program that he's losing it, that he starts to realize that this is his last shot, his last chance. And I think that'll make him turn back into the ultimate opportunist.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Edge came back to just kind of wrestle people, you know. I mean, when he retired, after the injuries, he was actually a world champion and had to relinquish his title. So I think he's got to win it at some point. So you may be onto something there. I can see that.
And that's a sidebar, but that's exactly what I feel like CM Punk is doing. He just back to wrestle people. But like, there's no clear story. He's just back to wrestle.
Yeah, so we'll see where Edge goes. I mean, Seth Rollins, you know, there's plenty of time for Seth. He can, you know, I think he can go anywhere, but that's going to be interesting to see where they take Edge from here. Then we had Saudi Arabia's own Mansoor taking on Mustafa Ali, and Mansoor was the biggest betting favorite of the day. Not a surprise, gets a win, and I got to tell you, he looked good. He and Ali had a good match. You know, not the match of the card, but I thought they did a solid job. What'd you think?
Yeah. I think Ali is a very underrated wrestler. I think he made Mansoor look very good. I think he did exactly what they, you know, paid him to do. And I think Ali should get more opportunities.
I think they both should. Ali was getting a huge push and then got hurt, you know, a few years ago. And then got stuck in that retribution angle. Good Lord. One of the worst things WWE's done in the last 5 years. But Mansoor, you know, he's a pretty good baby face. I mean, he's somebody that people can, I think, could get behind if they really gave him a chance. But unfortunately, maybe he's not, you know, the big sweaty guy that Vince McMahon likes. So we'll see. But, you know, I think they both could have a future if, you know, creative decide to switch things up a little bit. We had the Raw Tag Team Championship match. RK-Bro, Randy Orton, and Riddle defending against AJ Styles and Omos. And, of course, Omos continues to be protected. Don't want to take a pin on him. And Riddle got to ride technically it was a dromedary. We got to get that right. But Riddle and Randy win that match. Wasn't that big on the finish, but, you know, thought it was all right. You know, Riddle's a goofball. It just is. But, you know, it was there.
Heck of a wrestler, though.
Yeah, he is. Every time I get tired of seeing Riddle, I actually watch him wrestle, and I'm like, oh, yeah, he actually is pretty good. I mean, the match he had with Sheamus at WrestleMania I thought was, you know, pretty phenomenal.
And the match he had with Roderick Strong in NXT at TakeOver, oh, my goodness. That was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
Yeah, I think the big question is, now that you've AJ and Omos had their run with the title. They've lost the rematch. What do you do with Omos? Because he's not ready, you know, to be a top-tier superstar. You know, but at the same time, they're no one's going to beat him for a while. So can WWE be patient enough for him to get up to speed? Of course, for anybody who doesn't know, this guy's like 7'3", 400 pounds, and he's a monster. I mean, he is WWE's new giant, and I'm curious to see what are they going to do with Omos from here. I mean, do you put him in a feud with Styles?
No, I don't know, but I don't think the matches would be that good. I think you just have him kind of like a la like Braun Strowman. Like, I remember everyone was like, "Oh, what are they going to do with Braun Strowman now?" You know, when he had broke away from the Wyatt family, and he was, you know, a free agent on Raw. I think you just do the same thing. You do the exact same thing. Just have him be a monster, breaking stuff, throwing people through stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that'd be all right. That's what they do. We had the Queen's Crown Final, the most underwhelming tournament I've ever seen in wrestling history. Man, I would have rather had a Tiddlywinks tournament than the way this tournament went off. And that's nothing against the ladies. They just weren't given the time to perform for some reason. But Zelina Vega beats Doudrop, so we now have Queen Vega, and I get to rub that in tomorrow because I picked that one. Zelina Vega, what are they going to be able to push her up? I mean, it's interesting.
I think she can pull that Queen Vega off. I think everyone's so hyped about the whole Woods, you know, being king, but I think she's gonna be like, she's gonna do it like that. Like, she's gonna get over with the king, with the queen gimmick. It fits her little cocky, little sassy style, you know. So, I think that's gonna be the beginning of a push for her. I think she might be the person to take the belt off of Becky, to be honest.
Wow, that would be something. And I agree with you. That was what I was as when I saw her moving through the tournament. You know, I said I could see her being, you know, winning this Queen's Crown tournament and running around as a queen and being cocky and snotty and snooty, and I think it fit her. Boy, but I'll tell you, it's so sad. The other thing that made me sad about this was, you know, doing the matches in Saudi Arabia, for those that don't know, you kind of have to cover up. And you know, they actually had the first women's match ever with Lacey Evans and Natty a couple years ago over there. All the women were in T-shirts, long spandex, arms covered, and you know, and she wins a queen of basically a queen of the ring tournament, and has to, you know, put on the crown and everything, looking like she just ran out, you know, got done running in a November morning in Boston. I mean, that hurt. I just think that took away from it a little bit.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so
I definitely agree, but you know, I guess they have, you know, go along with their rules. So that's what they're trying to do.
What are you going to do? Goldberg and Lashley. You know, I wasn't excited about this match. Not at all. I didn't know what to think because, you know, Goldberg has put up a couple stinkers the couple times he's been out there. But I'll tell you what, Goldberg looked good. The 52-year-old getting it done. He's the same age as me. That's kind of scary. I thought Goldberg and Lashley did a fantastic job in that match. Good, you know, good solid finish. A little shaky on the announcing at the end, that, you know, because of course Goldberg was, you know, had the whole setup was that Lashley had attacked Goldberg's son, and he said he was going to literally kill him. Well, he didn't kill him, and then after he had speared him off the ramp, which was a great spot, into a couple tables, oh, Lashley's still down, and then they show him standing up and walking around. But you know, little Kevin Dunn mistake there, but you know, Goldberg looked good. What'd you think of the match?
I think it was very well wrestled. Like, you know, I think everyone has such a low, you know, expectation with a Goldberg match, but it was a good match. I think that was one of the best spots of the night, of him spearing him off the ramp.
Stage.
Yeah, the ramp. But I feel like sometimes they put Goldberg in a position to where they know he's going to get gassed out, but they still put him in a position to where that comes on on screen. That's not good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For him to come off on screen as, oh, he's tired, you know? So I think they, even though, you know, the internet community, you know, gets on about it, they need to keep his matches about 5 to 10 minutes.
Yep, absolutely.
So he doesn't look gassed out.
All right. And, of course, by the way, you're listening to the Mark Hoke Show here on KDWN. 101.5 FM, 720 AM, the Talk of Las Vegas. Special Saturday edition. Of course, by the way, we'll be back on tomorrow morning at 8 AM, so we get to do this all again with the Fish Man, Andrew Fishfane, our, one of our regular co-hosts on the show. So thanks for joining us. We do appreciate it. Then we had the King of the Ring, Finn Balor, Xavier Woods, and the seven-year dream of Xavier Woods of the New Day finally comes true. I actually did watch the coronation on SmackDown last night. Pretty happy for Woods. The match was okay. You're finding that I'm saying the matches were okay a lot here. But, you know, congratulations to Woods. You know, a guy who's been in the shadow of Big E and Kofi Kingston in the New Day for a while. You know, nice run for Xavier Woods there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think hopefully this King Woods, I would like to see him kind of like, do like a like King Booker like spin on it. That'd be dope. Or go heel. I kind of miss heel New Day.
You know, and I was thinking the same thing. You know, and I'm sure Fish is going to have something to say about this because he wants Kofi to turn on Woods. But I could see them doing something where Woods starts getting a little too big for his britches as King, and Kofi's like, "Hey, you got to tone it down, man." And Woods turns on him. I think that's a distinct possibility.
Yeah, I do too. I think those would be good matches. Kofi Kingston versus Woods. I think that'd be good to see.
Oh, I wonder if Big E could ref it. That'd be fun. we had a WWE Championship match, Big E against Drew McIntyre. Kind of everybody knew that Big E was going to win this match, especially after they taped tribute for the troops that's airing in 6 weeks, and Big E was the defending champion. So no real suspense on who won. But that was a great match. And, you know, Drew is going over to SmackDown now. You know, maybe he'll get to take on Roman Reigns over there. But, you know, pretty good match with Big E and Drew. What were your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I think Drew has really stepped up in ring lately, like the last year and a half. He's been really great in ring. And I think he's like the perfect foil for, you know, Big E in a ring. So Big E can do his powerhouse stuff and have someone who can do the pace along with him. So I think Big E also has been, you know, progressing in his in-ring ability as well. So I think both of them show that off at Crown Jewel.
Yeah, and I think the one thing for Big E that he's going to have to shake as being WWE champion, you know, everybody said, you know, he's a goofball and everything else. And I do like that he's still fun, but you can kind of see he's taking a little more serious tone, which I think is important as a, you know, you're the WWE champion. So you've got to be more intense, a little more, you know, I'm going to beat you instead of throwing around pancakes like they were doing. So, you know, we'll see how Big E evolves as WWE champion, and we'll see what Drew does. I think, you know, Drew kind of, you know, and I felt bad for Drew because, you know, we're coming around the Survivor Series here in a little bit. And I thought that was kind of where the downfall of Drew McIntyre started when they had him wrestle Roman Reigns in that champion versus champion match, and Drew lost, and you know, it just didn't seem the same with Drew after that. So maybe he can get a fresh start on SmackDown. So we'll see what happens there. SmackDown wins championship. Becky Lynch was the champ, taking on Bianca Belair and Sasha Banks. Once again, a great match. And Bianca Belair, this woman is a freak. James, I don't think there's any other way to say it. That woman is an athletic freak.
I've never seen someone as marketable as her be as good in ring. Like, they really got something with her. Like, I think she's an absolute superstar in the making.
And I think she already is. And, you know, I hopefully they're going to be able to rebound her from what happened in SummerSlam. But if you get a chance, go on Peacock and watch that match and see some of the things she did. Now, in terms of the match, you know, I thought at the beginning, you know, it was almost Young Bucksy. There were a lot of really spotty kind of things they did where, you know, it was obvious everybody kind of had to really coordinate it to make some of those things happen. But man, I mean, Bianca did a, and I can't remember if it was Sasha that she, was it Sasha that she benched military pressed with one hand?
Yeah, Sasha, yeah. Yep.
Man, that, I mean, the strength to do that, whether you're a male or female, is ridiculous. And, you know, she is just an athlete beyond belief. So, you know, I think the future's obviously really bright for her, and, you know, we'll see where everything else goes with Becky and Sasha from here. And then we had the Universal Championship match, obviously, the battle for Paul Heyman, Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar. Reigns gets the win after a run-in and smacking Brock with the belt that Paul Heyman threw in and landed in between the two of them. And I'm going to be honest. I thought it was a pretty good match, but I hated that ending. I really did. I didn't like it. I just, when I was watching it, I'm sitting there. I remember, because the spot that happened where they had the referee get knocked out, Lesnar has Roman Reigns up in his finishing hold, the F5, is going to do it. And I'm watching Charles Robinson, who's one of the most experienced referees around, on the side where I know he's going to throw Roman Reigns down. I'm like, what is Robinson doing on that side of him? So, of course, Reigns hits him. We have the knockout. We have the run in, the belt thing, the run in. And then my issue was this other referee finally shows up. He's running down the ramp. Now, and try to picture this. Okay, you see that there are two other people in the ring beating up Brock Lesnar. Shouldn't that have been a disqualification? But nope, he just hops right in, 1, 2, 3, and match is over. You know, so I thought the ending was a little bit shaky, but it was fun to see those two in the ring together.
And also, I did like how they did Paul Heyman. I think Paul Heyman might be one of the best characters they have on, or entertaining characters they have on WWE right now. Like, the way he threw the belt in which he threw it, where it was in the middle of them, so you don't even know who he was really trying to give the belt to to use it. And I think that the finish was kind of whack, but it did, you know, segue well into SmackDown, so where he said, okay, I'm going to beat up Roman Reigns as soon as I see him and beat him up. So, of course, he comes there and starts beating him up. So then we know, of course, the Usos come out, but he beats them up too and starts beating up everybody the whole show. So it was not the greatest ending, but it presented us with a good story view on the next SmackDown.
Yeah, and then on the SmackDown, Brock Lesnar goes crazy, gets suspended. He's gone for a while, as he, you know, will tend to do. So now we have a void of who is challenging Roman Reigns next. And, boy, that's going to be a tough question to answer. And then, of course, you've got, you know, Lesnar just kind of looming in the background somewhere. When's he going to show up? So that'll be – it's intriguing. I'm wondering who we think could possibly be stepping up to the plate to
McIntyre. Definitely McIntyre. It's going to be him. They're going to, you know, use him as the buffer until probably, like, you know, Royal Rumble or wherever Brock Lesnar comes back.
What, you don't want Rick Boogs?
No.
No Rick Boogs?
Not him in his denim singlet, no.
You got to give him credit for wearing a denim singlet in the ring. You really do. Maybe Kofi will get a match or something. I don't know. But, well, we'll see where that all ends up. But that's kind of a recap of Crown Jewel. You know, overall, thought it was a solid card. Not my favorite one of the year, but still a pretty good show. So, yeah. So there you go. There's our Crown Jewel review. We're getting ready to wrap things up here on the Mark Hoke Show in a couple of minutes. But did want to mention real quick, because, you know, we don't get to talk about Japanese wrestling too much on the show, but we did just have a major card event wrap up over there in New Japan with, it's the New Japan Pro Wrestling G1 Climax 31, which is really cool. They do this round robin style tournament. So they have, I think it was 18 guys or somewhere in there in two groups. 20 guys, excuse me. And Kota Ibushi won his group. And then Kazuchika Okada, who was most well known for all those unbelievable matches a couple years ago with Kenny Omega, won the other group. And everybody's excited about this final because it's two really good wrestlers. But then, unfortunately, during that match at about the 25-minute mark, Ibushi goes for his one of his finishing moves and his arm is destroyed. They had to stop the match, so Okada wins that by referee stoppage, unfortunately. So there you go. But you know, but there are stuff going on in Japan too. So a lot of interesting things happening.
Best wrestlers in the world.
Yep, absolutely. All right, so we are just about ready to wrap things up here on the Mark Hoke Show. James, I got to tell you, a lot of fun. Really enjoyed having you in here, buddy.
Thanks, man. Like I say, it's an honor to, you know, share the ring. You know, you legends like you, Fish, and Joe, sure.
Absolutely. So we're going to be back tomorrow morning. I don't know who's calling me, but bad timing because I'm in the booth. oh, man. But we'll be back tomorrow morning on with the Mark Hoke Show at 8 a.m. Here on KDWN. Follow us on the show at on our social media at Mark Hoke Show on Twitter, Facebook, The Mark Hoke Show, and keep on listening. We do appreciate it. We'll have a special announcement about something that happened in the ratings, too. So join us tomorrow, and we will see you then. Thanks for being with us. Have a great night.